Chapter 17. There's a platoon of Canadian special ops camped in a patch of woods 3 miles south of Niagara Falls. They're about 50 strong, built to move fast, but also equipped with some serious firepower, including surface-to-air missiles. The warship we've come here to commandeer isn't visible from where they're stationed. They've made it a point to stay out of sight, for obvious reasons. However, they've got a few scouts skulking around Niagara Falls, broadcasting back grainy footage of the warship hovering. Skimmers combing the nearby wilderness, vat-borne troops on the ground inspecting the dormant laurelite stone. They feed us all this intel as soon as we land, and otherwise don't interfere. I could get used to Canadian hospitality. If things go bad on the warship, this small team of special ops will cover our retreat. Our survival, according to their commanding officer, is their only priority. They've been apprised of our strategic value. All this thanks to General Lawson. I guess sometimes it isn't so bad to have the government in your corner. In Lex's ship, parked now alongside the special ops Humvees, I buckle an improvised vest across my chest. A cloaking device is hooked up to the front, plugged into a battery pack hastily stitched at the small of my back. This is what's going to get me on board that warship.
"You sure I can't come?"
Nine asks me for the 20th time. "I can only carry 2, I reply. "6 needs to come in case I screw up our invisibility, and Adam is obviously crucial to..."
"Flying your stolen warship," Adam interjects with a shake of his head. I glance at him, catching him running a hand through his black hair. He looks skeptical. In fact, most of my friends have looked skeptical since I unveiled my plan to commandeer the warship. Adam continues on. "You know, I've only flown a warship in a simulator. It's also not a one-person job. Not if you want weapons online."
"I have faith in you," I reply. "Worst-case scenario, we crash the thing into the falls, one less of them to worry about."
"How many Mogadorians will be on that warship?"
Marina asks, directing her question to Adam. He gives me an uncertain look before answering.
"Probably thousands," he says. "To get control of the ship, we'll need to make it to the bridge."
"And the bridge is where?" I ask Adam.
"Assuming we get in through the docking bay, it'll be at the opposite end of the ship."
"Thousands?"
Marina repeats.
"At least we're lucky that some are patrolling the surrounding area spreads them a little thinner,"
Adam adds, although he sounds apprehensive.
"It's an army,"
Marina says. She shakes her head.
"That's crazy, John. Stealing the cloaking devices from under their noses was one thing, but taking on this many alone?"
"We won't be alone." With the vest strapped securely to my chest, I open up a zippered pocket on the front. Immediately, Bernie Kosar shrinks down to the size of a mouse. With a glance at his fellow Chimera, Dust does the same. We left the rest of the Chimerae at Patience Creek with instructions to watch over the human guard. I crouch down and pick up both Chimerae, depositing them safely in my vest pocket. Marina raises an eyebrow at me.
"So you've gone from thousands against 3 to thousands against 5,
Marina replies. She clears her throat.
"John, I know what you're feeling."
I cut her off with a wave of my hand and meet her eyes. "I know that the odds seem bad. I know that I've seemed cold the last couple of days and maybe a little crazy. And I'm sure the vibe I'm giving off hasn't gotten any better since the dark dream I shared with Cetricus Ra last night. I can tell from the way they're all looking at me that I'm coming off a little unhinged. But even if that's true, I know I can accomplish this. I can feel the power coursing through me. One warship isn't enough to stop me."
"You have to believe in me,"
I tell Marina, keeping my tone measured, hoping that she can feel my certainty, see it in my eyes. "I know what I'm doing. I've got it under control."
"Look,"
Six says before Marina or Nine can register any more protests.
Adam and I will focus on getting the cloaking devices off the skimmers without being noticed, like the plan was originally, and John will concentrate on holding off the Moogs. If he happens to kill a couple thousand of them in the process, all the better. If not, we bail.
Marina breathes out through her nose.
How will we know if you're in trouble?
Ella raises her hand. She hasn't said much since yesterday, and I'm glad for that. The last time we talked, it was a bit too much to take in. The glowing spark in her eyes is a little dimmer than it was yesterday.
I'll check on them telepathically, Ella says.
And if we're in trouble, you'll hear me calling, I add.
Oh,
Marina says, her head tilted.
You can do that now.
Lexa leans against the cockpit door, listening to everything we've said without comment.
I've got a second cloaking device installed on our ship, she says. We'll bypass the force field, no problem, but you'll need to leave a door open for us.
It won't be necessary, I tell her. Six snorts.
We'll leave you an opening, Lexa, she flashes me a meaningful look. Better safe than stupid.
And bring some of the Canadians along, Adam adds. He glances at me. You know, if we do hit a snag.
I double-check that everything is secured to my vest and that the cloaking device is active, then take one last look at the others. We good? When no one replies immediately, I head down the metal ramp, off Lex's ship and into the misty morning air. There's a squad of soldiers standing nearby, waiting to see if we'll need them for anything. The rest of their unit forming a loose and stealthy perimeter in the trees. It's still strange to me, being constantly surrounded by armed men and women who are expecting me to command them, or save them. I take a deep breath and tilt my head back, looking up at the gray sky and the pointy tops of the pine trees.
You sure you know what you're doing?
That's Six, next to me, her voice pitched low so the others won't hear. Adam trails a few yards behind her, still on the ramp.
I have to do this, I tell her, my voice quiet as well. I need to know what I'm capable of.
You know it sounds a little suicidal, right?
I'm far from suicidal, I reply grimly.
Just remember, you aren't doing this by yourself, Six replies and pats me on the shoulder. I know the feeling of wanting to throw yourself at the enemy until they break, or you break, but...
As she speaks, a memory flashes to the surface of Six's mind with a force that's impossible for me to ignore. I'm still trying to master this whole telepathy thing. The most difficult part about it is letting the thoughts of others stay private. They just come rushing into my mind, unwanted, like this vision of Six standing in front of a gaping hole in the ground, wind swirling all around her, metal and rock debris tearing through the air, across the gap from her is Cetricus Ra, fleeing and on his heels, pushing against her with his own telekinesis, and next to her is Sarah. She pulls at Six's arm, tries to get her to retreat from the whirlwind of shrapnel around them. Mexico. I flinch at the memory. All this floods into my brain in less than a second, and Six stops talking to look at me funny.
You okay?
I'm fine, I reply and brace myself telepathically, close off my mind. I need more practice with a lot of these powers, but there's no time for that. Six frowns at me but doesn't press. She reaches into her pocket and produces an old-looking flip phone that she pops open to check the display. What's that? I ask, wanting to change the subject.
Sam's attempt to mimic the cloaking device, Six replies, holding up the phone. He wants me to try it out before the battery dies.
I didn't realize Sam had made progress with that. The phone doesn't look like much, but Sam's never let me down before. I touch the Mogadorian cloaking device hooked to my chest. Should we use that instead of this?
Let's not experiment while we're flying through the air, Adam says, joining us. If all goes well, we'll have plenty of opportunities to test Sam's device.
Six nods in agreement and puts the phone away. I look between the two of them. Ready?
Ready,
Adam replies. Six eyes us.
How exactly are we doing this?
It takes a little work to get us arranged. Six gets on my back in a piggyback position, her legs hooked around my waist. I hug Adam from behind, my hands locked around his chest. From there, Six is able to reach past me and put a hand on Adam's shoulder in case she needs to take over and make us invisible. I feel BK and Dust squirming around in my chest pocket, trying to get comfortable. We must look pretty ridiculous. I can see some faint smiles and raised eyebrows on the faces of the nearby special ops, and I'm pretty sure I hear Nine catcall us from Lex's ship. The embarrassment is only temporary, because we quickly turn invisible.
Are you doing that, or am I?
Six asks. Better that we both do it, I tell her. I've only had the legacy for a few days. I could make a mistake.
Oh, that's heartening, Adam says.
Don't worry, I tell him. It's really only flying that I'm still a little shaky with.
But we're about to...
Before Adam can finish that thought, I launch us up in the air. It's not the most graceful takeoff. It's a lot more forceful than necessary, but it does the trick. And soon we're soaring above the treetops at high velocity. I remember what Five taught me. Basically, not to think too hard about what I'm doing and trust my instincts. That means going fast and forward. Adam's hands grab my forearms hard, and I can hear Six laughing against my ear as the wind whips across our faces.
This is so weird, she says. I feel like a ghost.
Let's hope not literally,
Adam yells back. It's definitely strange, being invisible, flying through the sky, like we're the breeze itself. I wish I had more time. Or maybe the capacity to appreciate this. All I can think about is what's ahead. And soon, that comes into view. The steel-gray bulk of the scarab-shaped warship looms over Niagara Falls, casting a dark shadow on the rushing water. This warship isn't as big as the Anubis, but it's still a frightening sight to behold.
There's the Lorelite Stone! Six says. That, nondescript gray one down there?
I glance to a patch of wilderness, level with the start of the falls. I can't pick out the stone from this height, but I can easily make out the crowd of Mogadorians securing the area. I can also see the three downed skimmers that were taken out by the human guard. More of the little ships zip through the air around the warship, patrolling the nearby woods in slow circles. I fly us closer to the warship while looking down.
John?
Adam says as I survey the Moog patrols.
John!
I look up just as I first hear the vibrating hum of a skimmer's engine. It's practically right on top of us. The scout ship headed back to the warship. The pilot can't see us, but he's flying dangerously close all the same. I bank us hard to the right and narrowly avoid getting clipped by one of the skimmer's slender wings.
Shit!
Six yells. Her nails scratch my neck as she almost loses her grip. We do a barrel roll. The spinning disorients me, and for a moment, we're plummeting towards the rapids below. My fingers loosen, and Adam slips a few inches away from me. I grasp him hard under the armpits. Gritting my teeth, I stabilize us and get myself flying straight again. Everyone's holding on a little tighter now. Sorry, I say.
I take back any misgivings I had with your plan, Adam says breathlessly. If it means never flying with you again, I'll steal a dozen warships.
The skimmer that shook us up leisurely flies into the docking bay of the warship, the doors left open behind it. Despite the scare, that's perfect timing. I pick up speed, intending to get us through those doors. As we near the warship, the force field finally becomes visible. You can't really see it until you're rushing right towards it. Once you're within 100 yards or so, the air around the warship seems to bend, like heat lines rising from pavement on a hot day. I can make out a faint gridwork of energy, like a net surrounding the warship, which gives off a faint red hue. It reminds me of the aura that surrounded the mountain base in West Virginia, the one that made me sick for days after I ran headlong into it. "We're sure this cloaking device is going to work, right?" I ask, too late, as there's no way I've got the flying skill to put the brakes on now.
99% sure, Adam replies.
We hit the force field and pass through it. There's a faint buzzing in my ears and an electric vibration in my teeth as we go through the field, but otherwise, we're fine. I glide us forward, slowing my speed so I don't crash when we enter the Mogadorian docking bay. And seconds later, we're inside the warship, right as the skimmer we followed touches down for a landing. I keep us hovering for a moment so I can get the run of things. Even though Ella walked me through the Anubis, I've never actually been inside one of these ships. The docking bay is a huge, high-ceilinged area with dozens of skimmers arranged in neat rows. It seems they've only got a quarter of their fleet out searching Niagara Falls, and that's a good thing for us, since we need those ships stationary if we're going to dismantle them. Besides the skimmers, there's not much going on here. Just a lot of repair machinery, a few blaster racks, and some fuel tanks. And about 50 Mogadorians hard at work at various tasks, including the small crew of the skimmer we followed in here. They get out of their ship and begin refueling. Slowly, I set us down on the deck. Adam's sneakers squeak when they touch the metal floor, and he nearly loses his balance. None of the Mogs notice. 6. Do you have Adam? I ask telepathically. I feel Six's arm tense on my shoulders as I speak in her mind. She shifts position, presumably so she can get a better grip on the Mogadorian, which isn't exactly easy since none of us can see each other. Got him, she thinks back after a moment. I let go of both of them, now maintaining only my own invisibility. I'm going to clear the room. Do you need he- Six thinks back, but I cut off the telepathy before any more thoughts get through. I don't need help. Carefully, I roll up the sleeve of my shirt. There was something I didn't want the others to see me using, afraid of the bad feelings it might bring up. In truth, I'm kind of glad I don't have to see it myself. Still invisible, as I am, it might make me wonder what I've become. Shink! I deploy Five's forearm blade. We took it off him in New York, and I claimed it from Nine's things this morning. It's the perfect lethal tool for a job like this. Needle sharp and quiet. I float across the hangar so that I don't make any noise. There's a panel on one side of the room with an intercom and some video screens. Communications. There are two Moogs sitting there as I approach, watching live feeds sent in from the skimmers patrolling the falls. I drive Five's blade into the base of their skulls, one after the other, so quick that neither of them even notices the other's been dusted. I turn around. None of the Mogadorian mechanics or pilots have noticed. I won't let any of them get by me. I won't let any of them call for help. Methodically, I start to work my way through the hangar. I pick off the stragglers first, the ones who are isolated. I can float right up to them, right in front of their hideous faces, and the blade goes in easy. None of them even get a scream out. At a certain point, maybe after the 10th or the 20th, my mind goes on autopilot. It starts to feel like I'm not even the one doing this. It's just happening in front of me. I'm a ghost. A vengeful ghost. It's quick the way I kill. Merciful. A better death than these bastards gave the people of New York or any of the millions of others they've murdered. Sarah,
After a few minutes, one of the Moogs shouts out a warning. It was bound to happen eventually with all the dust floating through the air, with their numbers being thinned by half. They start to search around frantically. One of them screams something in Mogadorian and falls to his knees, looking hysterical. A couple of others follow suit. I'm not sure what to make of that. Most of them make a run for the racks of blasters or for the unmanned communications array. Blaster fire sizzles through the air from the direction of the comm panel. Blaster fire from blasters that I can't even see. Looks like Six and Adam helped themselves, then doubled back to make sure the Moogs were cut off. Smart. Guess I did need a little help. It doesn't take long for the hangar to be cleared. Unprepared and fighting against invisible opponents, where they thought they'd be safe, the Moogs don't have a chance. When the last Moog is just a grainy film on the windshield of one of the skimmers, I turn visible. Six and Adam quickly follow suit, both of them now holding blasters. Adam stares at me, eyes wide, maybe a little overwhelmed by the slaughter.
Shit, John,
Six says, raising an eyebrow at my choice of weaponry.
That was pretty intense.
Six jogs over to the double doors that separate the hangar from the rest of the ship and checks to see if there are any reinforcements waiting. We cut off the Moogs before they could raise an alarm, but someone passing by could have heard the blasters. She flashes me a thumbs up.
All good.
I catch Adam's eye and point to the spot where the Moog fell onto his knees.
The one who panicked. What was he saying?
Adam swallows hard.
He said that Cetricus Ra has truly abandoned them, that their lives are ending now that beloved leader is dead.
So, some of them actually believed that?
Six says.
Oh, yeah, Adam replies. Especially once John started going all Wrath of God.
They haven't seen anything yet, I reply. I open the pocket of my vest and finally let Bernie Kosar and Dust loose. They transform into their beagle and wolf forms and seem glad to be out of captivity. Dust starts to sniff around the floor, eventually making his way to the exit with Six. BK sits down next to me and licks my fingertips. If a dog could look concerned, he does. I ignore him.
Okay. How long before they notice we just took out their whole grease monkey division?
Six asks, walking closer now that Dust is watching the doors. Adam shrugs.
Depends when the next patrol's supposed to go out.
Don't worry, I say, striding towards the double doors. You focus on getting those cloaking devices detached. I'll see to the rest of the ship.
Be careful,
Six says. And then I'm through the doors. BK and Dust on my heels. The short hallway outside the hangar is empty, so I take a moment to crouch down and speak to the Chimerae. Watch my back, I tell them. I can do this as long as none of them get behind me, take me by surprise, and we don't want any of them getting through to Adam and Six. As I speak, both Chimerae transform into more imposing creatures. They're both still dog-like, but they're thickly muscled and razor-clawed, with durable, leathery skin and wicked fangs. The only way I can tell them apart is from the streak of gray fur that runs down Dust's spine. Good luck, boys, I say, and stand up and start deeper into the warship. There's an airlock on the next door that requires some strength to turn. Through that, the hallway opens up, red lit and austere, with doors branching off on either side of me. There's a pair of Mogadorians walking right towards me, the two of them studying a digital map of Niagara Falls. I fly forward, stab the first one through the eye, and grab the other one around the throat. Which way's the bridge? I ask him. He points straight ahead. I snap his neck. I don't want any of these bastards getting behind me, so I take each room one by one. I'll save the bridge for last. The first area I step into
looks like a barracks. The walls are honeycombed with narrow, pill-shaped beds. The Vatborn basically sleep right on top of each other. There are hundreds of Moogs here now, at rest, many of them hooked into intravenous lines of that black ooze Cetricus Ra loves so much, augmenting themselves while they doze. I suppose they sleep in shifts, resting up for the next assault. Today, their alarm clock is a fireball. I hold out both my hands and let as much fire rush out from my fingertips as I can manage. I let loose until my clothes actually begin to smoke. Soon, there's a wall of fire crackling out from me, roaring into the room. I smell burned plastic and a rotten, roasting smell that I know is that black ooze boiling. The fire begins to spread beyond my control. It occurs to me that I don't want to do any irreparable damage to the ship. As soon as that thought crosses my mind, the sensation in my hands changes. I go from pouring fire into the room to spraying the charred space with crystals of ice and frost. One of Marina's legacies. Hadn't even realized I picked that one up. It works so similarly to my lumen, it's just like throwing a car into reverse. What Moogs manage to escape their bunks and avoid getting torched are soon picked off by a volley of icicles. Rampaging through the barracks gets their attention. As I exit, a small squad of warriors rushes down the hall towards me. BK and Dust dispatch them quickly, pouncing out from adjacent rooms just as the Moogs draw near. The Moogs aren't prepared for this, I realize. They're not prepared at all. Now they know how it feels. I turn invisible before stepping through the next set of doors. Immediately, I'm greeted by a robotic voice alternating between English and Mogadorian.
"Surrender or die," says the voice. "Put down your weapons, beloved leader."
It's a language course, I realize. The Moogs are drilling their English skills, and that's not all. Deeper into this room, I spot a firing range. People-shaped targets scream and run against an ever-changing backdrop of famous Earth cities, New York, Paris, London. There's a digital readout for the shooter's score, which currently sits at zero on account of the program being abandoned. The Moogs training here. They heard me coming. They've quit their tasks and formed two groups on either side of the doorway, blasters at the ready. If I had walked in here, they'd have lit me up. Too bad. I'm a different kind of target. I quietly step into the middle of the room and turn visible. The Moogs yell, surprised, and open fire. Quickly, I turn invisible again and fly up over their blaster fire. They end up shredding each other in the crossfire. The survivors I finish off while floating over them, stabbing down with Five's blade, blasting them with fire and ice at close range, turning others to stone with a glance. A few of them try to book it out of the room. BK and Dust wait outside, greeting them with claws and gnashing teeth. At some point while I'm clearing out the training room, a shrieking alarm begins to go off. It echoes through the entire ship and is accompanied by a rhythmic flashing of the dull red lighting that runs across the walls and ceilings. No more element of surprise. Now they know I'm coming. When I start making my way towards the bridge, the passageway is conspicuously empty of enemies. Prowling a few steps behind me, both BK and Dust let out growls of warning. The Moogs have almost surely fallen back into a defensive position, a choke point, where they can throw all their firepower at me. Well, let's see what they've got. Two high double doors stand in front of me. Beyond them is the bridge. The alarm continues to blare. The lights continue to flash. When I get within 20 feet of them, the doors open with a hydraulic whoosh. Through the doors is a wide staircase that leads up. Above the staircase, I can just barely glimpse the domed windows of the bridge's navigation area, the blue sky of Canada visible. The ship is controlled from here. Surely the true-born commander is up there somewhere. On the stairs between me and my goal are about 200 Mogadorians. The first row on their stomachs, the next row on one knee, the next row standing, the row behind them on the first step, and on, filling the entire staircase. Each of them holds a blaster pointed in my direction. Once upon a time, this would have terrified me. "Come on!" I scream at them. The hallway crackles with energy as hundreds of blasters are fired off at once.